This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our Country Music Week continues with a concert of classic country songs by John Doe. As the co-founder of the LA-based band X, John Doe is one of the leading voices and songwriters of punk rock in the 70s and 80s. As our rock critic Ken Tucker has said, quote, "When John Doe started the band X in the 70s, his voice always stood out for its tunefulness, a high, lonesome tenor that could sing country and pop, as well as the harsher punk rock he and his then-wife Xine were producing." Unquote. Last year, John Doe recorded an album called Country Club, featuring his versions of country music classics written by Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, Roger Miller, and others, along with a few originals. When the album was released, he performed some of those songs on our show, backed up by two members of the band The Sadies, guitarist Travis Good and bass player Sean Dean, who are also featured on the album. We're going to listen back to that performance and interview. Well, welcome to Fresh Air. It's great to have you here. I'd like to start by asking you to play a song, and I have a request. Now and then there's a fool such as I. And do you want to say a few words about the song, John, before we hear it?
I heard it as a kid, for sure. And then somewhere in my mind there was a version, that was Hank Snow's version. Somewhere in my mind Bob Dylan did a slower version of it. And I tried to find it, and all he did was the Elvis version, which is sort of rock and rolly. Not good. And someday I'll find the Bob Dylan version of The Fool Such As I.
Unless you invented it and that version doesn't
exist. I think
really
maybe
exist.
I did. Maybe I just blended the two or something. I don't know.
Well, let's hear your version.
Okay.
Pardon me if I'm sentimental when we say goodbye. Don't be angry with me, should I cry? When you're gone, yet I'll dream a little dream as years go by. Now and then, there's a fool such as I. Now and then, there's a fool such as I am. Over you, you taught me how to love, and now you say that we are through. I'm a fool, but I'll love you dear until the day I die. Now and then, there's a fool such as I.
That sounds great. Thank you for doing that. And that's John Doe singing and playing guitar, Travis Good on lead guitar, Sean Dean on bass, and it's a song called Country Club. John, how did you decide to do a country album?
Well, for the last 20 years maybe, people would say, oh, you should do a country record, and it always seemed like a snooze to me.
Because?
Because of my voice. It's a pleasant voice, not really crazy. You can't identify it like Janis Joplin or Bob Dylan or something. It's not this signature Macy Gray, like, wow, that's a crazy voice. Or even, you know, modern Nico Case or something. So with that and a Nashville sort of smooth backing, it's like So, and Mercedes and I played together a festival in Canada, and I was like, this is what it should be.
Okay, here's my take on you singing country.
Yeah.
A lot of country is a kind of weepy singing because some of the songs are so sad about, like, tragic love, being an alcoholic, like all the horrible things that can happen to you. And I don't think you do weepy, but you have this kind of like desolate sound when you're singing some of these songs that really works.
Inside I'm weeping.
No, I love A Fool Such As I, and I sometimes think when I hear it, how different would the song be if it was A Fool Just Like Me? It just doesn't quite work the same.
Well, that's the beauty of country music, is it has this weird colloquial but sort of statesman prosaic. Like, I was thinking about, we do this song live, There Stands the Glass.
I love that song.
Yeah.
Okay, now you got to do a few bars of it. I was going to ask you to do it, but I figured, I don't necessarily know it.
All right. It's like, There Stands the Glass. It's like, that's a really weird sentence. It makes total sense, but it's like, aloft, the glass is before me.
Like,
drinketh
so
me
right.
down the glass of beer.
Okay. Do a few bars.
Okay.
The glass that'll ease all my pain, that'll settle my brain. It's my first one today. There stands the glass that'll hide all my fears, that'll drown all my tears. Brother, I'm on my way. I'm wondering where you are tonight. I'm wondering if you are alright. I'm wondering, do you think of me in my misery? There stands the glass. Fill it up to the brim till all my troubles grow dim. It's my first one today.
It's amazing about how a song about such misery can make me so happy.
Well,
I loved hearing you. That was a great performance. I love what you did with the there. I mean, that's really so big. It was so great.
Well, Webb Pierce did a great version. I used to do it in a higher key.
Right.
But I had to accept that. And then Ted Hawkins did a great
version. Oh, I know that version too. It's a
where
great
he would go like,
version.
And it'd be like a 5 minute there.
Yeah, he was just like homeless singer in California someplace.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, when did you start listening to country music and liking it? I mean, did you ever just like write it off as something that you weren't about?
No, because I'm a white man, and white men listen to country music. Over a long period of time, right, heard country music early on as a kid. Folk music was like for kids back in the 60s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all drew a line in like 74 of like everything that was before that we put away. And then sometime in 81... we started getting George Jones records for 50 cents at thrift stores, right? And then had a long period of idolizing that and feeling as though that was more valid than what we did.
Really?
Sure.
Because why?
Because it has a history, because it's, you know, it's just bigger. It's bigger than rock music. It's bigger than punk rock, for sure. And so it took me a long time to realize that I was just fooling myself, and I wasn't, you know, I had no connection to Johnny Cash or George Jones. I was just this, you know, kid from Maryland and whatever, and I learned how to play music and punk rock and stuff like that. And then eventually got sick of it, sick of country music. You can't listen to the same songs over and over and over. And then just recently felt like, well, this is different. This is more like a Bakersfield sound. It's harder, and these guys do know bluegrass really well, and so it has a good combination.
Let's do another song. By let's, I mean you. Do yes. another song.
You can join in.
No, thank you.
Okay.
From the new CD, and I have another request, and this is Stop the World and Let Me Off. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say a couple of words about why you chose it?
Actually, James Infelt, who's a singer in Los Angeles, has done this song for years. And I would see him do it once in a while. There's a festival called the Hootenanny. Saw him do it there, and it's just such a great song. So let's get the tempo here. One, two, three, four. Stop the world and let me on. I'm tired of going round and round. I played the game of love and lost. Shattered, don't you see? You no longer care for me. I miss the wonder of your kiss. How could you leave me here like this? Stop the world and let me on. I'm tired of going round and round. I played the game of love and lost. So stop the world and let me on. Stop the world and let me off. I'm tired of going round and round. I played the game of love and lost. Oh, stop the world and let me off.
That's great. That's Stop the World by John Doe and the Sadies. And they're here performing live in the studio. We have John Doe on vocals and guitar, Travis Good on lead guitar, and Sean Dean on bass. And their CD, Country Club, is an album of country classics and originals. And I'm really grateful that they're here performing live for us today. John, have you met any of the great country songwriters, either ones whose work you do on the CD? I know some of them are dead, but not all of them. Or other great ones over the years.
Yeah, I met several singers. I met Johnny Cash at the first Farm Aid, and I've met Merle Haggard a few times. He's such a nut.
Really?
Yeah.
He just
goes off on these tangents, and he just, you know, holds forth, and he's just, but he's really good about it. You know, he's nice about it. There's a little bit of the, like, you know, jailhouse, like, I'm going to tell you a story and you're going to listen. You know?
Well, he's spending enough
Which
time in jail to justify
well, a
that.
A little bit, you know. And there's plenty, of course, that you wish you would have met. You know?
Yeah.
I wish
yeah.
I would have met Roger Miller.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought him up, because you do a Roger Miller song I really love on the CD, Husbands and Wives. And I'll confess, it took me a long time to come around to Roger Miller. I'd always meet songwriters who admired Roger Miller, and all I knew were hits from the 60s that I really hated, like King of the Road, Dang Me, and England Swing Like a Pendulum Do. And I thought, what exactly do you like? You know? But it turns out he's really a great songwriter.
Well,
there's some great ballads.
It was hard to find a song that we felt we could pull across, because a lot of them are really sort of jokey, and it was sort of a great melody on all of them and great wordplay. But I think because it was kind of common knowledge, they were all taking amphetamines to beat the band. And so,
was that right?
Oh, I think so. I don't think I'm blowing anybody's cover. I mean, Waylon Jennings talks about it all the time in his book. Anyway, that's sort of, I think, where some of it came from. That's where the jokey, like, I'm really not taking this seriously, you know. But the one thing about country music, to go back to another question.
Yeah.
about why I wouldn't. People would say, you have such a great voice, you should do this sort of record. And I thought, well, if I do that and has the smooth Nashville background, it's going to be exactly what people hate about country music, which is too soft and too weepy and too, you know, all these negative things about country. Whereas with the Sadies, it's really rough, not up, you know, like rough, like rough and tumble. You know, it's got a serious edge, and even as much as we tried to smooth it out, you can't smooth that. You can't smooth these guys out. Sorry.
Yeah, no, well, I understand what you're saying. Well, I want you to do Husbands and Wives, the Roger Miller song. And, I mean, he does have some great ballads, including More and More, I Miss You Less and Less. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose this one? You said you were looking for a ballad, didn't want to do one of the jokey songs.
We thought about doing Engine Number 9, but that also has this sort of funny thing. I was hoping I could sing Baltimore and, you know, and bring back the hometown. but I think just of people splitting up, you know, and, or the other people that you admire who stay together, you know, which is, and it's just a beautiful song.
It is. Why don't you do it for us?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3. Two lonely hearts broken, looking like houses where nobody lives. Two people each having so much pride inside, neither side forgives. The angry words spoken in haste, such a waste of two lives. It's my belief pride's the chief cause in the decline in the number of husbands and wives. A man and a woman, some can, some can't, and some can. Two lonely hearts broken, looking like houses where nobody lives. Two people each having so much pride inside, neither side forgives. The angry words spoken in haste, such a waste of two lives. It's my belief pride's the chief cause in the decline in the number of husbands and wives. And a man and a woman, some can't, and some can.
That's great. That's John Doe singing and playing guitar in our studio with Travis Good featured on lead guitar and Sean Dean on bass. Well, it has just been great to have you all here. I'm so grateful to you for performing for us. I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
It's an honor, you know.
Our concert and interview with John Doe was recorded last year after the release of his album Country Club. Here's a track from it. The song, I Still Miss Someone, was written by Johnny Cash. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our Country Music Week continues with mandolin player and singer Ricky Skaggs. In 1970, when he was 15, he joined Ralph Stanley's Clinch Mountain Boys. He later joined the Country Gentlemen and J.D. Crow in the New South. then formed his own band, Boone Creek. He left the band to back up singer Emmylou Harris. In the early 1980s, he changed direction and became one of the most successful of the new traditional country artists, recording 10 number one hits between 1982 and 86. He won the Country Music Association's Entertainer of the Year Award in 1985. In 1997, he returned to bluegrass, becoming a leader of its revival. Here's a track from his 2008 album, The High Notes.
All the people would come from far away, they dance all night to the break of day, when the caller would holler, do-si-do, the new Uncle Ben was ready to go. Late in the evening, bouncing down high on the hill and above the town, Uncle Ben played a fiddle, Lord, how it rang, you could hear it talk, you'd hear it sing.
That's Ricky Skaggs performing the Bill Monroe song, Uncle Pen. I spoke with Skaggs in 2003. He started performing on stage as a child. When he was six, he found himself on stage with Bill Monroe's band. I asked him how that happened.
Well, he came to Martha, Kentucky, which is a little small town close to Blaine, Kentucky, where I was raised. And they played the high school. And we, my mom and dad and I, my brothers and sister went to see him. And we watched them unload, and, oh, man, that was the coolest thing to see them get out of this big stretch limousine that they were riding in, and looked like they just walked out of the dry cleaners. There wasn't a wrinkle anywhere, you know. They looked so stinking cool, and they got the bass fiddle off, you know, off the rooftop, and they set up a little sound system, and we went in and sat down and listened to them play. And about 20 or 30 minutes into the show, some of the neighbors in the hood started you know, requesting, let little Ricky Skaggs get up and sing, you know, and I see it in my own life now, you know, where people start, you know, making those kind of requests, you know, when I'm out on the road playing now. But after, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of that, finally Mr. Monroe said, well, where's he at, you know, and he didn't have any idea who little Ricky Skaggs was. And so I come walking up to the front of the stage, and he reaches down and picks me up and sets me on the stage and says, what do you play, boy? And I said, well, I play the mandolin, sir. And so he took his mandolin off of his shoulder and wrapped it around the, you know, made the strap fit me, you know, and I stood there and sang a Bob and Sonny Osborne song called Ruby, Are You Mad at Your Man? For a six-year-old to be singing a song like that, you know. But it was the biggest thing that had ever happened, you know, to me in my life at that time, being 6 years old and getting to play with the father of bluegrass music, Bill Monroe.
Is there a certain harmony that's like wired into your head from when you were really young, a certain like interval that you always sang?
Right. I always heard the third, you know, that's the tenor line is what we call it. If the lead was the one, and the tenor would be the third, and the baritone would be the fifth. Usually the fifth would come below, you know, the lead, until the Stanley Brothers moved it up above the third, which was really cool. But that's the part that I always heard. My mother said she would be working, doing her chores at home, cooking or whatever, and I would be in the other room playing with my toys, and she'd be singing in the kitchen, and she could hear me harmonizing with her in the other room at a young age. It was just, here again, it was just a gift that I could hear that part, you know, because I guess because she would sing that part with my dad when my dad was home. He worked out of town a lot because he was a welder, and he had to travel a lot to wherever the best jobs were. And so I would hear them sing, and that was the part that made sense to me was the third.
Well, while we're talking about harmony, why don't we play a track from the CD, Three Pickers? And you're harmonizing on this with Doc Watson. And the song is What Would You Give? Are you singing a third higher than Doc Watson on this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love this song.
Yeah, it's a great performance. So here you are with Doc Watson and Earl Scruggs from the CD Three Pickers.
Brother afar from the Savior today, risking your soul for the things that decay. Oh, if today God should call you away, what would you give in exchange for your soul? What
what would you give
in exchange?
What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give in exchange for your soul? Oh, if today God should call you away, what would you give in exchange for your soul?
It's Ricky Skaggs singing with Doc Watson, Earl Scruggs on banjo, from the new CD, Three Pickers. You had some classic 80s haircuts. I think that should not go unremarked.
Those.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Mac mullet. I had a few of those those mullet hairdos. My kids look back at them now and they said, "Dad, I can't believe that you had that." And I said, "Well, hey, it was the style then."
They made me do it.
They made me do it.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking, there's so many things that so many performers in country music do because that's what you're supposed to do in country music, and at some point you wonder why. Like, why does it go on like that? You know, like some of the costumes and...
I guess in the 50s, late 40s, early 50s, through the early 60s, you know, the nudie suits, the big flashy, all that, you know. I think there was a lot of artists that really felt that, you know... When a hard-working mom and dad came to the Grand Ole Opry and paid their money to come and see you, you know, you need to treat them the best you can treat them. You know, you don't need to be dressed just like they are.
Right.
They expect better. They've paid money. They don't want to see you dressed like they are. Because if they do, then you don't look any different, you know, even though you may sing like, you know, the person they come to see, they want to see you dressed to the nines, you know. And so I really think a lot of that was for show. You know, it was before videos. It was before, mm-hmm. you know, the big wide screens. And, you know, if you were sitting 40 or 50 rows back, you know, one of those red flashy suits, you could see it all the way, you know, 80 rows back, you know.
1996 was a really life-changing year for you. Your father died. Bill Monroe died, and you left country music and returned to bluegrass. Did the death of your father and the death of Bill Monroe connect at all with your returning to bluegrass?
Well, I think it did. Those two men were very, very strong pillars in my life. And I knew both of those men really wanted me to be playing bluegrass again. And country music in 96 was really... starting to, I don't know, it was starting to really, really change. And I don't know, I just saw the writing on the wall. I mean, I was not new country anymore. The kind of country music that I was wanting to record was really what I had recorded since 81, you know, and pretty much traditional country music, you know, trying to find really great songs mm-hmm. that said something, songs that had a meaning and love songs, and that just didn't seem to be what was selling on the radio. And so I really felt, you know, too, in my spirit that there was a real paradigm shift about to take place. And I felt like that at Mr. Monroe's death that there was really going to be a change in this music. I just felt like that when he passed away that there was going to be, you know, just a new audience for the music. And I wanted to go back. There was no way that anyone could take Bill Monroe's place, and I didn't, I certainly didn't come back to take his place, but I wanted to come back and take Ricky Skaggs' place because I really felt like that I had a place in bluegrass. And so in 96, it was a bittersweet time. I mean, like you mentioned, my father passed away, Mr. Monroe passed away, but there was even with that death, there was a new birth and a new life that came from that. And I think it was a turning point in my career. A lot of people says, "Man, you're the smartest guy in the world," you know. But it was just one of those things that I felt in my heart that I really needed to do, and it was the right thing.
Well, Ricky Skaggs, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, it's great being with you today, Terry. Thank you.
Ricky Skaggs recorded in 2003. His new album, Mosaic, features Christian songs. Here's a track from it.
Man. marble stone. They beat him until the blood ran. They brought him to die on a cross up on high, with spikes through his feet and his hands. You can use him, abuse him, mock and accuse him, sell him out for 30 pieces. Betray him, slay him, do the devil's mayhem, but you can't shake Jesus.
Coming up as our country music series continues, a 1996 interview with Charlie Louvin, the surviving member of the Louvin Brothers, whose vocal harmonies influenced the Everly Brothers. This is Fresh Air. Elvis opened for them. The Everly Brothers were inspired by their harmonies. The Byrds and Emmylou Harris recorded their songs. The Louvin Brothers are considered one of the great vocal harmony duos of country music. They were popular at the Grand Ole Opry and well represented on the country music charts from the late 50s until the mid-60s when the act broke up. Brother Ira was killed in a car accident soon after. Charlie Louvin kept performing at the Opry and has continued to record. He has a new album coming out in November. Charlie Louvin turned 83 in July. Shortly before that, he was diagnosed with stage 2 pancreatic cancer. We send him our best wishes. We're going to listen back to an interview we recorded in 1996 after the release of his CD, The Longest Train, featuring songs that he first recorded with his brother.
When I stop dreaming, that's when I'll stop loving you. The worst I've ever been hurt in my life, the first time I ever wanted to die, was the night when you told me you loved someone else. Ask me if I could forget. When I stop dreaming, that's when I'll stop wanting you.
Charlie Louvin with harmonies by Barry and Holly Tashian. I asked Louvin if it was difficult to sing without his brother's harmonies after his brother died.
I'd always believed that any song's worth singing is worth putting harmony on, and of course I had grown used to that for the 23 years that my brother and I had worked together, and even today, 34 years after he's gone, when it comes time for the harmonies to come in, I will move to my left, because my brother and I always just used one microphone. And so you had to share the mic, and I will move over to the left to give the harmony room, knowing in my mind that there's no harmony standing on my right, but it's just old habits are hard to break.
The harmonies that you created with your brother, I think, were based on the Sacred Harp singing that you used to do in church. Would you describe those kinds of harmonies that come out of Sacred Harp singing, or what's also known as shaped note singing?
I'm not sure, Terry, that I can describe them or explain them where they'd be understood. It's just something, I don't have any musical learning. What I know and what we did is it just came natural for us, because we was raised in a family that went to these sacred harp singings with the regularity. There's things that I can't explain to it. They're doing five-part harmonies, and most people today thinks that four is the limit when a quartet sings, that they've got all the parts, but the sacred harp or shape note singing people used the five harmonies, and some of them are extremely high with the ladies' parts, and none of them as low as the quartets practice today. It would be like a mid-range bass part.
Your early recordings were gospel tunes. Many of them were originals. In fact, why don't we hear one of those originals that you co-wrote with your brother Ira? This was made in 1952, and the song is called The Family Who Prays.
The family who prayed will never be parted. Their circle in heaven unbroken shall stand. God will say, my good faithful servant, the family who prayed never shall part.
Satan has parted fathers and mothers, filling their hearts with his envy and hate. Down to destruction, leaving their children like orphans to stray.
The family who prayed will never be parted.
It's the Leuven Brothers from 1952. Chet Atkins featured on electric guitar?
Yes, Chet recorded our first Capitol record with us, and Chet is a big part of the Leuven Brothers sound, from The Family Who Prays right on through to the end of the Leuven Brothers career.
You were singing a lot of gospel songs early in your career, but I know your brother Ira had the reputation of being a heavy drinker and of having quite a temper. Did you share the same religious convictions? Did you live with the same kind of values, or was there a big, big difference there?
No, a lot of us know better, but we don't do better. He knew better. He is extremely well-versed on the good book as far as knowing what was right or wrong. He just wasn't able to conquer the devil, I guess. But we didn't have any major problems with the drinking until, I'd say, not end of 1958. The Leuven Brothers records, the sales slowed down as all other country artists did in 1958 because the music was changing. And so our producer told my brother, I believe that it's the mandolin that's keeping the Leuven Brothers records from selling, which had always been a featured part. My brother worked hard to become proficient on the mandolin. And when this producer, namely Ken Nelson, said this to my brother, my brother feeling that Mr. Nelson was a close friend and a trusted friend, he believed him. And so he would never play his mandolin again on a recording. After that statement, if it would come up, somebody would say, I think this would sound good with the mandolin. My brother would say, no, let the piano do it or let the guitar do it. Anybody, but I'm not doing it. And it caused him to drink extremely heavy, and he went, between then and the time he passed away, went through three wives and just lots and lots of problems that he never could whip.
Did you start losing dates, too? Did he get a reputation for drinking a lot?
Unfortunately, Terry, if you're half of a duet, one person in that duet don't ever get a bad name. It's just the Leuven Brothers did this.
Mm-hmm.
The Leuven Brothers did that. Anything he did, good, bad, or indifferent, I was in the minds of the promoters and the radio stations and what have you. I was as guilty as he. And no way that I could change that. The only way I could change it would be for us to not to be together. And that finally happened in August 18th, 1963, we had gone from a pretty good career, from early the 50s, the song The Family Who Prays, right on up through our recordings, we had done quite well, and we find ourselves in 1963 on the bottom of the totem pole, and that's what happened to the Leuven Brothers' career.
I want to play another original gospel song that you recorded. called I Like the Christian Life. That's really a beautiful song. Graham Parsons loved this song and used it on the Byrds album Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Do you remember writing this?
No, I don't. Things went and come in the Leuven Brother career. Sometimes my brother would be a totally good man. He could have been a preacher if he wanted to. He was that knowledgeable of the good book, and he had the gift. But my brother was the gifted songwriter. I came up with the ideas. If I could give him a title and a few words of the story, he could write it in 5 minutes. So this is the way we worked. I don't specifically remember the day that song was wrote, but I remember that my brother was attempting with all of his might to live a Christian life. So at that time, and the statement was made, I like the Christian life. He thought that might make a song, so what you're about to play is what he got just from that title.
Let's hear it, and this is from Charlie Leuven's new album called The Longest Train.
My buddies tell me that I should have waited. They say I'm missing a whole world of fun. But I am happy and I sing with pride. I like the Christian life.
That's a 1996 version of Charlie Leuven singing the Leuven Brothers song, I Like the Christian Life. You and your brother broke up the Leuven Brothers and went your separate ways in 1963, and it was, I think, just about a year later that your brother and his wife were killed in a head-on road collision, and I think it was the driver in the other car that was drinking and that was responsible for the crash. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. It happened in Missouri, halfway mark between Kansas City and St. Louis. My brother was coming home from an engagement that they had been on in Kansas City. And the other two people was going from St. Louis to Kansas City to celebrate Father's Day. They just started celebrating it too early, that's all. They didn't wait till they got out of that car.
How did it change your life when your brother was killed?
Well, I'd already become a solo artist, so to speak, Terry, and I had released, or Capitol Record people had released, I Don't Love You Anymore, which went to the number one spot. And I believe the second song was... Think I'll Go Somewhere to Cry Myself to Sleep. And it was doing good at the time. And my brother kind of felt that somebody had done him wrong, but I hadn't. Music is the only thing I knew. And so naturally, I would try to stay in the business because he had sworn to me that he was getting out of the business. However, he was making attempts to get back into business, had a couple of records released for Capitol Records. Neither one of them had done anything, but I'm sure that if he would have been given time, he'd have figured out what the public wanted, and that's what he would have gave them.
You still performing with the Opry?
Yes, ma'am.
How long has it been?
I'm almost finished with my 42nd year.
Wow.
In February next will be my 42nd anniversary, and I'll start into my 43rd year with the Opry, and I'm really hoping that it'll work into something regular here soon.
Right. Charlie Leuven recorded in 1996. He last performed at the Opry in July, which is the month he turned 83. It was quite a month. He also underwent surgery for stage 2 pancreatic cancer. We wish him well. We'll close with a 1958 Leuven Brothers recording of one of their best-known songs, a song that Emmylou Harris covered, If I Could Only Win Your Love. You'll find links to all the interviews in our country music series on the website nprmusic.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.